the divine souls. I've been explaining to you about Gyan Marg for the last few days. In this long series of speeches, we learned that in order to attain God, we have to become surrendered. And in order to become surrendered, there's a path that we have to follow. I explained to you first about the path of karma and how the path of karma is incomplete on its own, because good karma, although it's better than doing bad karma, it keeps you under the bondage of maya. It keeps you in the cycle of birth and death. The most you can attain is a brief vacation in swarg. But that's also temporary, and it doesn't give divine happiness. But if you add bhakti, if you surrender your mind to God while performing good karma, it becomes karma yoga. That is a path to God. So the karma yogi receives liberation from maya and the attainment of divine bliss. The karmi does not. Similarly with the path of gyan. We learned that there are two kinds of gyan: theoretical knowledge and experiential knowledge. Theoretical knowledge on its own is of no value. It has to be put to use practically. And spiritual knowledge, how is it put to use? You develop a desire to know God. On the path of gyan, experiential knowledge is also of two types: atmagyan and brahmagyan, knowledge of the soul and knowledge of God. Without doing bhakti, the most that a jnani can attain is atmagyan. He can know the divinity of his own soul, but he cannot know God simply by following the practice of gyan marg. Because on the path of gyan, although he is renouncing everything, he has no desires, and he's meditating on formless God, but formless God cannot grace him, because formless God is inactive. He has to surrender to the personal form of God to receive his grace, and only then he can be free from maya through the attainment of brahmagyan, the knowledge of God. So divine knowledge is only received through God's grace. The jnani can know his own self, but he cannot know God without surrendering to God. So the jnani also has to add bhakti. He also has to do devotion. When he adds bhakti, then he becomes a jnan yogi. So the jnan yogi can be freed from maya through God's grace. The jnani, who does not do bhakti, remains under the bondage of maya and will fall even after having attained that height of atma jnan. Jivan mukti api punarbandhanam yanti karma bhi. Veda Vyasji says, even after becoming jivan mukt, in other words, he became atmagyani, even then he can fall back under maya and start doing ordinary karma again and be bound by those karma. I mentioned to you that the jnani's approach is different than the bhakta's approach. The jnani thinks of his oneness with God, with formless God. And the bhakt thinks of his relationship with God. So one is called dvaita bhakti, when you try to love God as like in a personal relationship. And one is called Advaita Bhakti. Understand a little bit more about this philosophy of jnana. Why? Not because you have to apply this particular philosophy in your life or on the path of bhakti. But you have to understand what's out there so you can avoid the pitfalls on the spiritual path as well. And some of you may be carrying some confusions around in your mind because of something you may have heard related to the path of Gyan. So it's important to understand that philosophy as well and what are its shortcomings. As I mentioned previously, this philosophy of the path of Gyan, this Advait philosophy, is very prevalent in the world nowadays. Even though it's impossible to follow the path of Gyan in Kaliyug, I also explained that to you, yet talking about this philosophy has become very popular in the world. The whole philosophy can be summed up with one Sanskrit phrase: Jiva Brahmaiva Jagan Mithya Na Para. You've been hearing me say again and again that our Vedas tell us there are three eternal tattva: Brahma, Jeev, Maya, God, the souls, and the world. But this Advait philosophy, this philosophy of absolute monism, or the philosophy of non-dualism, says there is only one and there is none other. How does it shrink three down to one? It says, Jiva Brahmaiva. Souls are not a separate existence. Souls are God. So there, now you're left with two. You eliminated souls. They don't exist. Actually, God exists. Souls, they may have forgotten they are God, but they are actually God. So you can't count them as a separate tattva or entity. So now you have God and Maya. So what about Maya? Jagan Mithya. The world is fake. It doesn't actually exist. So there, you got rid of Maya also. So what's left? Brahm. Just God. Now someone may say that in our Vedas, you do find statements that seem to back this up. Ekameva dvitiyam brahma neha nanasti kinchan. Chandogya Upanishad. There is only God and there is no other. Nothing else exists apart from God. Seems like it backs up this Advait philosophy. Purukh eve dagvam sarvam yad bhutam yatcha bhavyam. Purush Sukt also says, everything is God. Isha vasyam idagvam sarvam yat kincha jagatyan jagat. Isha vasya Upanishad. Again, it's all Brahm. There's nothing other than Brahm. But you also find statements in the Vedas like, Dva suparna sayuja sakhaya samanam vriksham parikhasva jate. There are two birds, God and the souls. Two birds sitting in a tree. The tree is the physical body, and the two birds are eternal friends. So, this would seem to contradict that theory that there is only God and there's nothing else. Here Vedas are saying, no, God is there and souls are there. And in many, many verses of the Vedas, you find it said, Gya gya udva vaja vishanisha vaja hyeka bhoktri bhogyartha yukta anantaschatma vishvarupo hyakarta trayam yada vindate brahma metat. Shvetashvatra Upanishad. No, there are three. Gya, the one who is all-knowing, God. Agya, the one who is very little-knowing, the souls. And there's one other one, Maya. Those three exist eternally. Ajami kam lohit shukla krishnam bahvi praja srijamanam sarupah ajo ye ko jushmano nushete jahatye nam bhukta bhogam ajonya. Again, Shvetashvatra Upanishad. There are three eternal tattva: God, the souls, and Maya. Here it is said that the souls, that's one eternal tattva, they are eternally trying to enjoy this Maya, trying to find happiness in Maya, which is the second eternal tattva. And the third eternal tattva, God, He's beyond both Maya and the souls. Charam pradhanam amritak charam hara charatma na vishate deva ekah tasya bhidhyanad yojanat tattva bhavat bhuyaschante vishva maya nivritti. There are three eternal tattva. There is one char, meaning maya, that which is degradable. One akchar, the souls, which are impermeable to change, impervious to change. And one ish, one God, who governs both maya and the souls. So He is supreme. And the souls are under maya, and by tasya bhidhyanat, by meditating on God and surrendering to Him, yojanat, joining their mind in surrender with God, they can be free from maya. They can be freed from maya. Shvetashvatra Upanishad. So you see, even in the Vedas, at some places it is said there are three tattva, at other places two tattva, at other places only one. Why three? Well, three is the correct number. There actually are three: God, the souls, and Maya. Why two? Because sometimes Maya is left out because it's jar. What's the use of talking about Maya? It's a lifeless, mindless power. So at some places, Ved only refers to God and the souls. And why only one? Because God permeates Maya, He permeates the souls. So where is there that God isn't? To say that you are God is correct from one point of view. There is not any part of you where God is not. But from another point of view, it's wrong to say you are God, because you are in control of your own actions and thoughts. You have your separate personality from God. You have your free will. So from that point of view, souls are individual entities. Even after attaining liberation, they don't cease to exist as souls. But because we are not separate from God physically, He is within every particle of our being. Thus we say, I am God. It's correct from that point of view, not from the point of view of our intelligence or power or blissfulness or anything like that. Same thing with the world. We say this whole world is nothing but God. It doesn't mean that Maya doesn't exist. It just means that God permeates every particle of this material world as well. So to say God is the form of this universe is correct. Yet Maya is still a separate power from God. It can't exist without God. It can't function without God. So we say that sometimes we say there is nothing but God. Souls can't exist without God. Maya can't exist without God. They exist within God, and God is within them. Thus we say there's only God and there's nothing else. Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha sarvam khalvidam brahma The first one from Gita, the second one from Chandogya Upanishad. A saint experiences and sees that God is everywhere. So it's from that point of view that Ved says there is only God and nothing else. But practically speaking, souls do exist and Maya does exist. We have to understand that it's only from a certain point of view that Ved says there's only God and nothing else. It doesn't mean Maya doesn't exist. It doesn't mean the souls don't exist. Now let's come back to this Advaita philosophy. In this Advaita philosophy, it is said that souls are God. They're not a separate entity from God. Then the question comes, how are souls under Maya? Maya is this material energy that makes us suffer. All the souls under Maya suffer. They suffer from ignorance. They suffer from the consequences of their bad actions. So what we're actually saying in this Advaita philosophy is God himself is under Maya and is suffering and is ignorant. How did it happen? Well, they say, the ones who follow this philosophy say that God forgot he was God. It doesn't sound very likely, does it? But this is the theory. That all of us started thinking we were something other than we were. In other words, we started thinking we were individual souls instead of realizing we're actually God. So it means you and I are not separate individual beings. We're actually God, the same God. And somehow, somewhere along the line, we forgot we were God and started believing we were individual souls. And because of this confusion, we also imagined this world to exist. The world does not exist in this philosophy. It is merely the imagination of those souls who forgot they were God. Or actually, to put it more clearly, this universe is the imagination of God who forgot he was God, started thinking of himself as a soul, and then got confused about the world existing also. Mind-boggling, isn't it? This is the philosophy. And it's a very popular philosophy in the world today. I mean, it sounds nice on the surface. People generally stay on the surface. They don't even go as deeply into it as what I just described to you. They just hear, oh, I'm God? Okay, that sounds nice. That sounds good. I can live with that. If God forgot who he was, how did it happen? How was he able to forget who he was? The Vedas say, Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. They also say, Yah Sarvagyah Sarvavidyasya Jnanamayantapah. God is divine knowledge. He's the form of divine knowledge, just like he's the form of divine bliss. He is all-knowing. So how can all-knowing God forget something? Something so important like who he is. They give an analogy that it's like if you're walking in the dark and you see a rope lying there and you take it to be a snake and you get scared. Something like that, God got confused. He thought the rope to be a snake. In other words, he got confused about his own existence and started imagining this world and thinking of himself to be many, many souls. Or keep it on a personal level. You forgot who you were and imagined this universe to exist. However, this analogy isn't entirely, it doesn't match up. See, they say there's only one thing. There's no Maya, because that's just, we imagine that. There's no souls, because they're actually God. So when there was only one, just God, then what was there to get confused about? See, you see the rope. That's an existing thing, right? The rope is real, and you imagine it to be a snake. So the real thing can cause a confusion. You can get like an optical illusion about the real thing. Like, there's sand, there's sunlight, and there's the heat waves coming off the sand that refract the sunlight and create the optical illusion that there's water over there in the desert. It's a mirage. But the sand is real, right? The sand is real. The light is real. The water is the illusion. So illusion exists on the basis of reality. Illusion can't exist in thin air. You get confused about something that actually exists. You can't get confused about nothing. You saw the rope. The rope exists, and you think, oh, it's a snake. But if there never was a rope in the first place, what is there to get confused about? There was only God, nothing else. And he got confused about himself? Did you ever imagine yourself to be a snake? You can see a rope and think, oh, the rope might be a snake. But did you ever walk in the dark and think, oh, I might be a snake? You don't get confused about yourself. So what did God get confused about when there was nothing else that existed except himself? It's impossible to get confused. So in fact, their theory disproves itself. There would have had to be a second tattva for God to get confused about. It proves the existence of Maya by the very fact that God is confused. Now the question comes, when did he get confused? Was he always confused? Or he became confused one day? Meaning Maya took control over God one day. Or you can say ignorance. Brahm. Brahma ko Brahm hua. Brahm means confusion. Brahm means God. So if it happened one day, think about that. This ignorance, this agyan, is so powerful that it overpowered God. And God forgot he was Brahm and started thinking of himself as uncountable individual souls. So it means, if we do all this work to remember, what they say on this path of gyan is, all you have to do is remember that you're Brahm. You forgot your Brahm. Now remember your Brahm. And simply by remembering that you are Brahm, you get freed from this illusion, because you created the illusion. Maya doesn't actually exist. So let's say you succeed in remembering that you are Brahm and you get liberated. What if this ignorance again overtakes you? And again, you end up in the same state. What's the use of doing all of that effort to get liberated from this when you can just end up back in the same place again? But in fact, we know that God can never come under ignorance. God can never be overtaken by Maya. God is supreme. There's another problem with this theory. If there's only one God, then all it should take is for one soul to get liberated, right? God forgot he was God and imagined himself to be many, many souls. So if even one of those souls remembers that he's God and gets liberated, it should mean all of us would get liberated, right? Because there's only one. There's not many. But uncountable souls have gotten liberation. Yet we haven't been liberated. So it proves that souls are separate from God. That souls are in fact many. So in this way, by looking more deeply into this theory, we've understood and proven, in fact, that it's totally illogical, if you look at our current situation, to think that there's only God and nothing else. If you really examine it, you'll see that, of course, God exists, but souls have to be understood to be a separate existence from God. Otherwise, how could we be ignorant and under Maya? Because God can never become ignorant. God can never forget He's God. And God can never come under Maya. And it also proves the existence of Maya. Because if all the souls are simply imagining the existence of this universe, how likely is it that we would have all imagined it exactly the same? We may have differing opinions about what's beautiful, what's not beautiful, what's desirable, what's not desirable, but we all agree on the shape and form of this world. You all see a black microphone here. None of you is seeing a banana right now. Unless anyone is hallucinating. But people whose senses are functioning normally, you all see the same thing. Were you laughing because I look like a banana? I hope no one's seeing me as a banana right now. So we see the world the same. You're all seeing a person sitting here, not a banana. You're all seeing a microphone. You're all seeing a harmonium. So it shows that the world has to be real and we're simply perceiving it. We're not imagining this world. So Maya is really here. Yato va imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayantyabhisam vishanti. Taittiriya Upanishad. This world comes from God. It exists within God. And during pralay, it dissolves back into God. So if you say that, when Veda is saying the world is from God, within God, and in the end returns to God, if you think that, oh no, this world is just an illusion, then what you're actually saying is, this world was created out of God's confusion. Anyway, enough is enough. You've understood that this theory has many logical holes. If you examine it, you have to come to the conclusion that there are three eternal tattva: Brahma, Jeev, Maya. Brahma is eternally beyond Maya, has never been touched by Maya or touched by any confusion or ignorance or suffering. God is eternally blissful and omniscient. And souls are of two types. Souls are uncountable in number. And out of those uncountable souls have gotten liberation and are in the divine world. And uncountable souls, all of us, we're under Maya. Maya also eternally exists, and we also eternally exist. And our mayic bondage has existed since eternity. But it doesn't have to keep existing for all eternity. If we follow the path to God and become surrendered through His grace, we can be released from Maya. But when a soul is released from Maya, Maya is not destroyed. The mayic bondage of that soul is destroyed. So you are released from Maya, but Maya is a real power. So Maya will always continue to exist. It's merely a question of whether the souls surrender to God and become released from Maya. When we become released from Maya, then we enter into God. And there are different ways of attaining God, as I explained to you yesterday. The two main ways are either to attain the personal form of God, Sakar Brahm, or to attain formless God, Nirakar Brahm. Although the Jnani has a very difficult path, it's very difficult to qualify for, it's very long and arduous, and in the end, he has to surrender to Sakar Brahm in order to receive his grace to be liberated from Maya. Then he receives Brahmanand, the bliss of formless God. But that bliss of formless God has been described to be, you can't say less because unlimited is unlimited, but somehow at a lower level than the bliss of Sakar Brahm. Or you could say there's something more in the bliss of the personal form of God. So I told you yesterday that we actually have some examples from our history of saints who were already experiencing Brahmanand, the bliss of formless God. And they then got a chance to experience the bliss of the personal form of God. So let's start in Satyug with Brahma. Brahma is the creator. He's so great, so intelligent, who could be a greater jnani than him? He created this Brahmand out of empty space. Akashad vayu vayor agnihi agnerapah adbhya prithivi prithivya aushadhaya ityadi. Taittiriya Upanishad. There was Akash, empty space. And after receiving Shri Krishna's Agya, Brahma created this Brahmand, this planetary system. So he is the first and foremost Jnani. What does Brahma say? Brahma says, Tad bhuri bhagyamiha janma kimapyatavyam yad gokule pikatamang ghrirajo bhishekam yad jivitam tunikhilam bhagavan mukundas tvadyapiyat padarajah shruti mrigyameva bhagavatam. Here, he is heard praising the gopis. The gopis are saints who have received the bliss of the personal form of God. So here, in praise of Shri Krishna, he's praising the gopis, saints. He's not even praising Shri Krishna, but it's showing Shri Krishna's greatness that he's praising saints who have attained the divine bliss of Shri Krishna. You can call it Premanand, the bliss of Shri Krishna's divine love. He's saying, I want to have the foot dust of the gopis. And in order to receive that foot dust, Shri Krishna, I'm asking for a boon. Please let me be born as any plant or creeper in Gokul, so that when the gopis walk by, I'll get Rajabhishek. Their charan raj, the dust of their feet when they walk by, that will cause some dust to go up in the air and it will fall on me if I'm living there as a plant in some form. He says this foot dust is sought after even by the richas of the Vedas, yet they fail to receive it. And even Brahma says, Shashti varsha shahasrani maya taptam tapah pura nanda gopavrajastrinam padarenu palabdhaye tathapi namaya praptas tasam vai padarenava. He says, I did tapasya, austerities, for 60,000 celestial years. Why? Because I wanted to obtain that foot dust of the gopis, yet I still failed. So it's showing that what those gopis have attained, the bliss of Shri Krishna, the bliss of the personal form of God, it's something which is desired by even someone who already has Brahmanand, the bliss of formless God. Let's come to Sanakadik Paramahans, who are Manas Putra of Brahma. They're produced by Brahma on this earth planet, and they're eternal Jnani saints. Four young brothers, they always remain in their form as five-year-old boys. And they are born Paramahans. They don't wear anything. They walk around, go anywhere in this whole world, anywhere in the whole universe. They have total access. And they're ever absorbed in Brahmanand. I mentioned to you that one time they had gone to Vaikunth abode. Remember when they got stopped by Jay and Vijay? So once that part of the Leela had played out, they went on past the gate and they entered Vaikunth abode. So of course, Mahavishnu resides in Vaikunth. Mahavishnu is Shri Krishna's almighty form. He is Sakar Brahm. He is God in a personal form. Now, Sanakadik Paramahans enter, and they haven't even gotten darshan of Vishnu's divine form yet. As they enter, what happens? Tasyaravinda nayanasya padaravinda kinjalka mishra tulasi makaranda vayu antargata svavivarena chakarate sham sankshobhamaksharajushamapi chitta tanvo bhagavatam. There was a tulsi flower in the divine world. Tulsi plants also have flower. There was a tulsi flower that had been offered at the lotus feet of Mahavishnu, and the gentle breeze that was blowing carried the fragrance of that tulsi flower mixed with the fragrance of Bhagwan Vishnu's lotus feet. And that smell entered through their nostrils, and the moment it entered, their samadhi, their absorbed state of mind, where they don't know anything, don't see anything, don't smell anything, yatra hi dvaitamiva bhavati taditara itaram jigrati taditara itaram pasyati ityadi. Ved says a paramahans, someone who is absorbed in the bliss of formless God, doesn't see anything, smell anything, hear anything, taste anything, touch anything, think anything, know anything other than his own self. He sees himself everywhere. In other words, he sees Brahm everywhere, and he's one with Brahm. This is the state of a Paramahans. Yet the moment that divine fragrance entered his nostrils, their nostrils, their state of samadhi was revoked totally. They were awakened with a desire that, oh, what was that? So imagine someone who couldn't smell anything, but the divine fragrance, because Sakar Brahm can be experienced with all five senses, the divine bliss. It's not just like a fragrance. That divine fragrance contains unlimited bliss of the personal form of God. Just like the sound of God's voice has the same unlimited bliss. The sight of his form has the same unlimited bliss. So none of that can be experienced when you're only conceiving as of God as formless. So when that experience came, they totally forgot about that bliss of formless God. And they exclaimed, Kamam bhava svavrijinair niraye shuna syat cheto livad yadinute padayoramet vachaschanas tulasivad yaditeng hrishobha पूर्येत ते गुणगणैर् यदि कर्णरन्ध्रः। भागवतम्। They exclaimed to Mahavishnu when they came and actually met him and saw his beautiful divine form as well, O Prabhu, please give us birth in Narak, they asked. Let us be born in hell. God Vishnu is thinking this is a rather odd thing to be asking for. No, but we have a condition. What we mean is we're willing to be born in Narak. We'll go anywhere on this condition that we always get to keep experiencing this bliss of your personal form. We should always get to hear your name. We should always think of your form, sing your name. As long as we have that, you can make us be born anywhere, even in Narak. So you see, these are Janmajat Paramahans who are willing to go to that extent to get the bliss of the personal form of God when they had already been experiencing the bliss of formless God. But don't think that it's a different thing. I'm not saying formless God is different and the personal form of God is different. It's the same God experienced in a different way. There are many other examples, like King Janak in Treta Yuga, Uddhav Paramahans in Dwapar Yuga, and quite a few Gyani saints from Kali Yuga as well. I'll continue with those examples in the next speech. Puli Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.